Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
All right. Well, I'm excited for today. I've got so many things just bursting at the seams inside of me, and I wish we had hours upon hours and that you had the attention span of hours upon hours so we could just roll through this. But we'll just break it up for a number of weeks here. And there are, as a communicator, there are times you communicate that are just elevated compared to other times. And I feel like personally I'm in one of those seasons. So I'm excited to just continue to pull back layer upon layer of who we are, what we are, and some things that I feel like is very insightful. And I feel like God is very much on. And if you've been here, if you were here last week or a few weeks ago, we were wrestling with a couple ideas around two body problems and three body problems. And last week specifically, we took this reality in physics of a three body problem of how three objects orbit together within space and the parallel of God and humans and understanding that God is the one that healed the brokenness between God and humans orbiting together. But there's a third body that entered into the equation called culture. So we wrestled with that last week around this idea of God, humans, and culture. How do we can definitely get a sense of how we orbit around God and how God's gravitational pull keeps us in healthy relationship here. The Abba Father, the love of God, is what heals our hearts, heals our wound, but invites us into deep relationship. In fact, whenever we feel the opposite, he comes running and chasing after us. And so we really begin to wrestle with that. But then we have the reality that we live in a world. We live in a world that in many ways is broken. Cultures are broken. Systems are broken. We are broken. We understand that. And so how do we reconcile three bodies, God, humans, and culture? How do they actually orbit together? So we wrestled with that last week and understanding that culture adds a complexity to it. And to be honest with you, I think a lot of the church prefers to say, you know what? We don't need culture. And so we just draw some really hard lines and say, we're done with the world. We're done with culture. We're done with humans. We're just going to focus on God and self or God and us. And so I think if we were to be somewhat honest with ourselves, we would almost prefer two body problem, God and human. Let's just stick to that. But the reality is we don't have that option because you're in a world. We're in culture. We're in society. And as much as you remove yourself from that, you're going to, at some point, you will have to reconcile. What did Jesus command us to do? You'll have to reconcile living in this world, not isolating yourself, and you have to reconcile theologically, biblically, and even socially when Jesus says go into all the world. And when you look at his life, you have to reconcile, okay, Jesus obviously didn't only live in orbit to his Father. He actually had a third complex body, and that was culture, that was humanity and society. So today I want to continue that conversation and talk about why we are passionate about engaging with culture, investing in cities, making the world a beautiful place. Why is that important? And we kind of, I opened a can of worms last week, and since this last week, I've heard from numbers of you saying, wow, there's a lot more in there. So we're going to just kind of open the can a little more and go a little deeper into this reality of why would we invest in the world today in matter if we think it's all going to burn with fire in the end? And that's the question that we kind of cracked open last week. And today, I want to continue to go into that. If you begin to wrestle with how you think it ends in the end, then you have to ask some larger questions today to reconcile some big questions. And that's what I want to do, is put some larger questions that revolve specifically around your and our eschatology. Now, just to get everybody up to speed, if you hear some large words today, there's an amazing tool called Google or ChatGPT. You can use them as we talk. If I say a word that doesn't make sense to you, just put it in and get a definition. But to get everybody kind of on the same page today, when we say the word eschatology, we're referring to the study of end times. So each of us actually have an eschatology. What does that mean? That we actually have a perspective of how it all ends. You might be like, I don't know. Guess what? That's your eschatology. I don't know. Because that's how you think. That's your perspective. Now, some of you are more in the camp of like, it's going to end. It's going to burn up. God's going to destroy everything. And then some of us have a very different view that God's going to renew, redeem, restore. So the point that I want to establish today is that all of us have an eschatology, whether we realize it or not. It could be anything from, I don't really know, to this is what I think it is. And there's such a variance and gradient within those views. But what I want you to understand is that your eschatology informs your discipleship. Your eschatology shapes and forms how you follow Jesus. Now, I understand some of you think, well, it doesn't really matter how it ends. It actually does. It actually really does matter how you think it ends in the end, because it actually informs how you follow Jesus and why you follow Jesus and what it looked like to follow Jesus. So this is, I want to continue to pull back layer upon layer. And so today is, again, going to be continually foundational, and it's going to help, hopefully help move you into some new ideas and some new approaches. I asked last week that we as a community proposed and suggested strongly we move away from a worldview that has this framework, secular versus sacred. Secular versus sacred. If you weren't here last week, you will definitely need to listen to last week. I don't want to dive too deep into last week right now. But I asked that we would seriously consider moving away from any theology worldview that has secular versus sacred, and that we would move towards a view that all is sacred, that everything belongs to God, and that creation is good and redeemable. That we would move away from escaping this world and work towards seeing a renewal of this world. You guys still with me? When you begin to see how much of a secular, sacred framework affects your theology and your philosophy and your ideologies, you begin to realize it really influences how you view the present day and how it affects your view of the future. And that's what we're trying to unpack and uncover. And at some point, you'll need to go a little deeper to inspect, or at least assess, or acknowledge on a lighter scale, acknowledge that you and I each have held large assumptions and strongly held beliefs. The challenge when we get into these kinds of conversations is for some of us, all of us, let me back up, for all of us, whatever assumptions and belief that we've held onto strongly, our entire world is built on that. So when someone proposes another idea or framework, it's very difficult to move to another framework because your entire world has been shaken. Your entire world has been built on that idea, that framework. And this is why it's very challenging to talk about these topics in a larger scale. And I actually hope there's more people that listen to this. But this is what makes it fun for me and also keep me up at night. Maybe that's why I'm waking up an hour into my night. I don't know. My subconscious is wrestling with this. But in all seriousness, I want to encourage you, if you feel a dramatic shaking of your views of existence and the future and end times and what you do today, just promise me you won't freak out and shut out. At least be open to other possibilities that are actually very, in my opinion, biblically rooted and based. So I want to encourage you. Some are like, oh, I can't go there. This is what I, that's fine. We all have that. I have it as well. But if you're willing, it's not about deconstructing. It's actually about constructing more towards what I would propose is more in line with the life of Jesus and the person of Jesus and God's intent. So at least be open to flexing, just so you could step into a new future that is more hopeful, has more grace, has more mercy than you currently experience today. Okay. So Jesus wins in the end. I think all of us can say, oh yeah, Jesus wins in the end. But I think all of us might have a different idea of what that looks like and how he actually wins. Some of us, Jesus wins when he destroys the world. Yes, that's my man. He won. We have a theology and eschatology that said we win when all of this is burned with fire. Some of us, I would say Jesus wins also the redemptive renewal route. So I don't question whether we think Jesus wins or not. And I would propose almost everybody in this room, at least the people that have committed their life to Jesus, we could all agree on Jesus wins. But I would also propose how he wins and what it looks like is where there's going to be some differences and variances, and in some cases, extreme. So I thought it would be helpful before I jump in continuing that I want to put before you, and if you want to write these down, I do have slides today, so get your phones ready, get all that stuff ready, because we're going to lay some really strong foundation today. I want to propose to you some other issues of secular and sacred, and if you go deeper than secular sacred, it has to do with spirit and matter. Spirit and matter can be summed up in this word, dualism. Dualism, I'm not going to get into the roots of it, wrestles with the idea that spirit is good. Let me back up. Dualism enforces the idea that spirit is good and matter is bad. That anything in the spiritual realm is beautiful, it's good. But anything in the natural, it's bad and negative. That frame of thought eventually led to what we call secular and sacred. So I want to show to you why there are some issues with it. It doesn't hold up. And here's a few just for note. It shrinks the gospel to personal, private salvation. It reduces it down to just a personal, private relationship with God. It disconnects Jesus from the real material world. It undermines the value of culture, work, beauty, and justice. It promotes escapism. It, as if the goal is to leave earth for heaven rather than participate in the renewal of all things. So today's title is The End of Escapism. The End of Escapism. How many are ready to just at least consider some options? Stephen's ready. Anybody else? Okay. I want to start off with a question. We know that Jesus died for humanity, but did he die for all of creation? Let me ask it again. We know that Jesus died for humanity, but did he die for all of creation? I want to introduce you to a very large idea that is very foundational to the Christian faith, and it's the word incarnation. I'm not talking about Nacho Libre's song. Some of you are like, I listened to Encarnacion yesterday. If you've not heard that song, it is one of the most classic movie soundtracks you'll ever hear. So listen to it later. Do not listen to it now, because you will not be able to absorb the information I'm about to give you today. I want to introduce you to a word, some of you are aware of it, some of you this might be a new term, to a major theme in Christian theology. It's incarnation. Incarnation is foundational to understanding the person and the nature of Christ. Incarnation comes from the Latin word meaning in the flesh. It refers to the eternal Son of God taking on human nature through the virgin birth and becoming the man Jesus of Nazareth. There's a passage of scripture I'm going to read to you at John 1:14. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The early church wrestled with this idea, how do we explain and articulate the complexity of Jesus as divine God taking on human form? I understand this is a really beautiful study of incarnation. I'm just going to skirt the top of it. Hopefully some of you will get hooked and you'll go deeper into it. But this is complex. In the early church, there was a group of them met in 451 A.D., and they gave a foundational statement that I want to read to you. Jesus is one person with two natures, fully divine and fully human, without confusion, change, division, or separation. So this idea of incarnation wrestles with the concept of Jesus being in the flesh. He didn't leave his spirit behind and just became a human. He's fully divine and fully human. This is one of the most bedrock studies of Scripture for everything that we're going to be talking about and everything we have been and will continue to talk about. Go to the next slide. I want to talk to you a little bit about Jesus in the flesh and what it actually introduces. When you begin to wrestle with this, when you're going to look at this and ask you to look at in the flesh, this is what it introduces. The first one is that God doesn't avoid matter. He enters it. Dualism says spirit is pure and matter is corrupt. Jesus was born human. This affirmed that matter is not beneath God. It's where God chooses to meet us. Another thing it introduces is God is not distant. He is present. In dualistic thinking, the divine is up there and out there. But incarnation, God is with us, which we get the word, the name Emmanuel, walking, touching, eating, weeping, and working. The other idea that Jesus in the flesh introduces, the body is not a problem. Some of you need to just sit with that for a second. The body is not a problem. It's a temple. Man, there's so many things I want to go after. Man, I wish we had 5 hours. It would be, I would pull up, we would just have a little theological party up here. The body is not a problem. It's a temple. Jesus affirms the dignity of the body by taking one on himself. The incarnation reclaimed the body as a sacred space, not a barrier to God, but a vessel of his presence. Can I get something from that one? I mean, that's... And I think some of our dualistic thinking has taught us that this thing is bad, it's evil, it's meant to be discarded, and our lives reflect it. Okay, I got to keep going, or else we're never going to finish. Next one. The earth is not a stage for escape. It's a place of redemption. Dualism says our goal is to leave earth and get to heaven. The incarnation said heaven comes to earth. God moved towards creation, not away from it. Another idea to introduce you to everyday life is now sacred. If God became human, then nothing human is irrelevant. Meal, conversation, work, art, tears, and sleep. So the incarnation is not only a theological mystery, it is the essence of why it's important to have a manifesto of how we engage with culture. We can't just discard it and say, well, that was Jesus. No, he took on human flesh to set in stone what I believe was the original intent. So God does not flee matter, time, culture, or chaos. He enters it, he joins it, and redeems it from within. It would be one thing if God never took on flesh and redeemed it from the outside, but he decided to come within it, embody it, and then redeem it. Okay. As we get into this, I thought it would be helpful to see how the idea of spirit and matter, sacred and secular, creep into our daily lives, especially for us that follow Jesus. Some of you are like, okay, I like this, but I'm not sure how it showed up in my life. So go to the next slide. We got a few slides here. You're going to need to take pictures for this one. Soul-focused salvation. It's the emphasis on saving the soul from hell rather than the holistic renewal of the person in this world. Another one is the world is not our home theology. It's a heavy emphasis on heaven as the final destination, often sidelining care for the earth, justice, or cultural engagement. Prophetic words, angelic encounters, or miracles may be seen as more meaningful than faithfulness in ordinary family and life. You know why there was a response to that one? Because that had crept into our thinking. We thought, oh, this is really important. And we have missed out. And this is where secular, sacred, spirit, and matter have crept in and brought division on how we view life. Go to the next slide. Spiritual experiences are elevated above ordinary life. The supernatural is often emphasized in contrast to the natural, as if one is more real and spiritual than the other. Man, each one of these could be a whole Sunday in of itself. Let's keep going. Disdain for tradition and structure. An overemphasis on spontaneous, spirit-led moment can sometimes devalue embodied practices, sacrament, liturgy, or spiritual disciplines. Are you guys flowing with me today? And this is not for the person sitting next to you. I know some of you are like, oh yeah, so-and-so. No, no, make this personal. Make this very much about where you're at. Because the only way we can move forward is we actually take ownership and responsibility. Gifting and formation. Gifting is more important than formation. This is how it's crept into our daily life. Spiritual gifts are prioritized over long-term character development, vocation, or creation stewardship. Next slide. Heaven-focused eschatology. This is another area that it's crept in, this dualistic way of viewing existence. Heaven-focused eschatology, which sees the world as declining and destined for destruction. Next one, bodily suspicion. Though the spirit-filled believers, there can be a lingering discomfort with physicality, body, emotion, sexuality, and earthly pleasure. Some of you are like, I don't know about this. I know. Just hang on. Hang in there. Holiness teaching, while well-meaning, these often rely on withdrawal from the world. Clothing codes, media bans, boycotts, you get the idea. It reinforces a clean versus unclean dichotomy. Let me make one comment on that. The priest in the Old Testament avoided sickness, avoided disease, avoided anything dirty. Jesus represented the new priest that touched everything that was dirty, everything that was sick, and everything that was broken. And what happened? It got healed, it got cleaned, and it got redeemed. Jesus is the prototype of what is meant to be lived in our life. We're not to avoid culture, we're actually supposed to engage it to redeem it from within. Next slide. I know, I'm hammering these. A strong focus on the rapture encourages escape over engagement. This is how the dualistic thinking has crept and affected our daily life. This kind of thinking is often subtle, but shows up in how we talk about full-time ministry versus regular jobs. Or how we reduce salvation to just getting souls to heaven. So let me ask this question again. We know that Jesus died for humanity, but did he die for all of creation? Okay, I'm going to pick up my pace just a little bit here. We got kids backstage. As we look at these familiar long-held beliefs and assumptions, it can be daunting to move away from them. Once we embrace Jesus in the flesh, which is incarnation, it opens up a whole new world of possibilities about the future. In my opinion, it might move you from depression, discouragement, hopelessness, despair, into hope, grace, and mercy. It's a completely different perspective. So one of the profound implications of the incarnation is that Jesus came not only to redeem individual human souls, but to restore all of creation. This is a central thread of biblical theology, though it's often underemphasized in traditions shaped by dualism or escapist theologies. Okay, next slide. How the incarnation, now let's talk a little bit about how in the flesh points to the redemption of all creation. We have touched on some of it already, but here's a slide for you to have it all in one nice, neat little place. The Word became flesh, a passage we read earlier. God didn't just appear to be human. He took on real, physical, biological, embodied flesh that matters. Jesus' humanity means that material creation is not disposable. It's redeemable. Next one. In Colossians 1:15-20, there's a phrase in there that said, through him to reconcile all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven. Paul presents Jesus as the cosmic Christ, the one through whom all things were made and through whom all things will be reconciled. In Romans 8:19-23, the creation itself will be set free from its bondage and decay. Paul makes it clear, all of creation groans for redemption. We know we groan for redemption, but I think the larger idea that all of creation is longing for redemption. Not just human soul. The incarnation, ultimately the resurrected Jesus, is the first fruit of that renewal. What I want to say here, the original language that Paul uses to talk about the redemption of the human soul is the same language he uses for the redemption of all creation. So it's not just in reference to the human soul getting saved, it's actually in reference to all of creation being redeemed. So just an important note there. Okay, point four, resurrection as first fruit. Well, Jesus' resurrection wasn't just an escape from this material world. It was a bodily resurrection. It was a prototype for the new creation. What God did in Jesus' body, he will do for the entire cosmos. Point five, the incarnation and the new creation. Revelation ends not with us going to heaven. It actually ends with the new Jerusalem coming. This is in Revelation. This isn't in Genesis. This is in Revelation, the most famous book that's studied about end times and eschatology. And I'll be frank with you, so much of it is, I have so many opinions and thoughts on that book. And what I mean by that is it can be very confusing. It's incredibly poetic. It's incredibly metaphorical. It's incredibly, incredibly symbolic. And in my personal opinion, a lot of it has already happened. But that's a whole other can of worms I am not willing to defend today. But I want to say that because I think it's important to recognize in Revelation, the idea is less about us leaving this earth. The idea is about a new Jerusalem coming to earth, which is where Jesus said the kingdom is coming. So Revelation not ends with us going to heaven, it's new Jerusalem coming down, dwelling with us on a renewed earth. The incarnation in the flesh, Jesus in the flesh is a down payment for that. Okay. In short, if you lost me somewhere in the last 20 minutes, I'm going to sum it up for you right here. The incarnation dignifies creation. The cross reconciles creation. The resurrection renews creation. And the ascension, which when Jesus ascended back to the Father, and the return guarantee the fullness of that renewal. So the cross isn't just for the human souls, it's for everything broken by sin. Last but not least, slide. The belief that the spirit is good and matter is bad essentially divorced what God had designed to dwell together. Let me read this again. The belief that the spirit is good and matter is bad essentially divorced what God had designed to dwell together. I want you to ask yourself this question before we wrap this up. Why do you gravitate towards an escapist theology? It's a fair question. It's a fair question to ask ourselves. It's a fair question to ask all the key theologians over the last 20 centuries. It's a key question to ask John Calvin, Martin Luther, Augustine, Constantine. I mean, the list just goes on. I would propose that why humans gravitate towards an escapist theology is when hope is not their driving force of their view of the future. When they are in so much suffering and despair. I don't want to diminish that. This is important because sometimes we can dismiss the people that think differently than us. We have to understand when you have so much despair and so much hope, hopelessness, and so much pain and so much sickness and so much suffering, you spend your entire life just trying to survive. The most exciting thing about that is this is going to end. I'm leaving this thing. And so one of the reasons I would propose to you today is why a lot of escapist theology, dualistic thinking, not just thinking, why a lot of that was framed, it was a response to the world and the reality that they lived in. So in some way, we have to understand, we create paradigms and theologies and ideologies to try to explain our human experience. And I want to draw your attention back to what I believe that Jesus wants to renew, redeem, and restore all of creation. And getting saved, yes, it's about, quote, going to heaven, whatever that may be, at some point. But I actually want to propose to you, I think following Jesus and accepting him and getting saved is also an invitation to participating in the renewal of all things. He's going to renew you by the power of his Spirit. And guess what? And we get to participate in the renewal of all things. So why don't we stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com. And you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.